I'm Dean Jackson. He's Joe Polish. And this is the I Love Marketing Podcast.
Here to interview just an amazing guy, my friend Robin Sharma, best-selling author. How are you?
Shake hands.
Yeah,
good.
Exactly. I'd hug you right now, but we got this weird table in front of us. I mean, you're a stud. You're awesome. You have this fantastic book, The Leader Who Had No Title, and you just have such incredible insight on leadership. So, but let me first ask you, what time did you wake up this morning?
Well, you know, you're sort of suggesting the 5 a.m. club, which
yes.
is. You know, a great obsession of mine, but when I travel, I try to make sure I get enough rest. Mm-hmm. So I'm on a different time zone. So I was good to myself and I made sure that I got enough rest so I would be prepared for you.
Right.
But I did get into the gym as well and ran some of my protocols. But yeah, rest is important when I travel.
Well, first off, you have some great videos online. So I'm going to recommend that this, for people that don't know who you are, I hope this is just an introduction to your work and that people by watching this go out and read your books, watch some of the videos, go to your site. I mean, you put out an incredible amount of really awesome content.
Thank you.
So I want to talk a little bit about your rituals, and then I want to get into some leadership and ask you about that. So what's a typical day for you? I know you travel. There's probably not one typical day, but what
right.
are some of the things that you always do that you have found have really been useful?
So when I'm in my usual routine and in the pocket, Joe, there's the 5 a.m. club, right? And I run what I call the 20-20-20 formula. I shared it with you.
Yeah.
You know, many people around the world have found great value from it. And it's pretty simple. I mean, it sort of rolls back to what the Spartan warriors once said. And they said that the person who sweats more in training bleeds less in war.
Right.
And whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you're an artist, whether you're a baker, whether you're a yoga teacher, whether you're a mom, whether you're a street sweeper, you know, when you walk out in the world, there's a call on your life to bring your best game to the world and release as much talent as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, what they do is they get up every morning and they sort of run their day by default.
Right.
And they're chasing the day and they let life act on them in a very reactive way. And so I think what we want to do is see ourselves as warriors of some sort, where we take from 5 to 6 every morning and we prepare ourselves mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And so to give a tactic to your many listeners, it's the 20-20-20 formula. First 20 minutes, as soon as you get up, 5 to 5:20, intense exercise. And that's going to do a whole bunch of things. I a lot of my work is very science-based. And it's going to create a pharmacy of mastery. So you're going to release dopamine, which is the motivational neurotransmitter. You're going to reduce cortisol in your brain, which is the fear chemical. You're going to release serotonin, which even if you're cranky, you start to feel good. You're going to release BDNF, which scientists are calling miracle grow for the brain, which actually allows your brain cells to repair from stress. I mean, this is exciting to me.
Yeah, it is.
So that first 20 minutes, you rewire your brain. What else do? You jumpstart your metabolic rate. What else do? You prepare yourself for resilience against stress, and it just goes on and on. Second part of the 20-20-20 formula, you plan. You pull out a journal. You can do an imprint of your day, which is very powerful, or you can look at your big five or your plan. That releases hope. It releases focus,
mm-hmm.
right? Because an addiction to distraction is the death of creative production.
Totally.
Okay? And then the final part of the 20-20 formula, learning. I mean, he or she who learns the most wins. What made Steve Jobs or an Elon Musk is they know more than anyone around them. And so I believe that, you know, the more you know, the more you can achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And there's great value investing as much money as you have into audiobooks or programs like you do at the Genius, you know, the 25K conference and the Genius Network or whatever it is. But, you know, every quarter I make sure I get out of my office and I go off to a conference. I invest a lot of money in learning and training and coaching. And that's the 20-20-20 formula.
Yeah, well, I will say a lot about you. I mean, one thing that I really admire, I don't think I've ever told you this, is that when you first came to one of my events I was doing, I didn't even know who you are initially. I mean, I knew your books, but I really didn't know who you were. And you had no intention of like, oh, I'm a big deal. I'm the smartest guy in the room. And there are so many authors that I know and so many speakers, and you're incredible. I mean, you're one of the best in the world. That really want everyone to know that. I mean, there's like this ego that's driving them, and I've never seen any trace of that with you. And maybe it's been there before, and I'm sure there's, you know, certain levels of healthy ego, however you look at it, but you are one of the most coachable people that follows the advice that you demonstrate. I mean, you do, from everything that I've ever seen, you do. I mean, you know, maybe you've got some weird, bizarre habits, I don't know. But what I like about the way you show up mm-hmm. is that you just, you're extremely coachable. And even times where I'm like, hey, would you like to come up on stage? You're like, ah, you know, I'm here to actually learn. Mm-hmm. So where did you make that? Yeah, yeah. I mean, I really think it's a cool trait because I have seen a lot of people that are so used to the world admiring them. Mm-hmm. You know, they have fame, they've gotten notoriety, and certainly you've mm-hmm. had plenty of that. And they literally can't sit and listen to someone else. They quit learning. Mm-hmm. And some of the people that I read their books in the beginning, that when I meet them later in life, they're mm-hmm. actually not as good as they were when they were more hungry, mm-hmm. when they weren't just kind of in that game. And I think you're just a student as much as you are a teacher, which I think is what makes you such a great teacher.
Well, thank you. I mean, it goes back to my dad, you know, and he was very much about humility. I mean, he's 77 right now, and he gets up every morning and he goes off to his medical practice, and he still sees patients all day. And he said, you know, I said, Dad, why are you still doing that at 77? He said, because my patients need me. Wow. And so I think, you know, one of the core values he was so brilliant in sharing with me is to be an instrument of service. And I think mm-hmm. the moment your ego runs your brain and the ego runs your business and the yeah. ego runs your way of being, then your gifts and your talents and your focus and your capabilities are off the creativity and the talents and the service that will make you great in the world. And I think it gets to a very philosophical point, if I may.
Yeah.
I think it's relevant to any leader, any entrepreneur, any business builder, any game changer. But, you know, I mean, there is such an addiction to the shiny toys that the ego sells us. Okay?
Yes. Yeah.
And society and the matrix and our peers and the world says, if you get a Ferrari, if you sell 10 million books, if you have lots of money in the bank, if you have, you know, the beautiful partner and the big house, then you're going to wake up every morning and look in the mirror and you are going to feel full of joy and peace and feel you're fully alive. And, you know, I've had most of those in my life at a pretty exponential level. I've been very blessed. And not one of those things has provided me with enduring, sustainable happiness and fulfillment.
Yeah.
And the things that provide me with just deep happiness and deep fulfillment and energize me all come from a position of inner power. And so, you know, at the events you're talking about, I don't derive much power from all the books I've sold or bestseller. I don't care about that stuff. I really don't. I care less about that than ever before. At the end of the day, we are a bunch of people on a little planet in a huge galaxy. And before we know it, we're going to be a bunch of dust. And the great billionaires get buried next to the taxi drivers and the pizza makers, right. And we are not that big a deal. Yeah. And I think all that really matters is while we are alive, you know, do your best to use every day as a vehicle to birth your talents into the world. And secondly, if you do that, you're going to serve the world and raise the world with you. Mm-hmm. And that all just comes from inner power. I mean, that's just deriving your power from a place within, you know, and that's where you get grace and that's where you get great creativity. That's where you get boundless energy because it's not about addicted to what the world thinks of you.
Right. Well, so when did all of this shift happen for you? I mean, at what stage in your life? You were in, your former life, you were a litigation attorney.
Sure.
What happened? Were you in some mental pain and you needed to seek out how to figure this out? Or were you always like in an inspired state because you had a great father and great upbringing? I mean, what's the course of your path?
That's a great question. I did have a great upbringing, but I became a lawyer for all of the wrong reasons. It was, right, that external power. So I thought, yeah, I'll be a lawyer, I'll make a lot of money, and that's going to make my life meaningful and wonderful. And I did those things, and I just felt really empty. Mm-hmm. And so that was my turning point, like in The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari. A lot of it was based on my life. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started to ask myself a lot of the bigger questions and what I wanted to stand for, and I started to think about my own values, and I started reading books of the great entrepreneurs and the great fortune makers and the great humanitarians, and I you know, went to courses and I listened to different audiobooks and I tried to figure out how to live a much more meaningful as well as authentically successful life.
Right. So I'm gonna ask you about leadership. I've got some questions that I really thought through to just get the best essence of what I think you can share with people watching and listening to this. So when it comes to leadership, do you think anyone can be a leader? And if so, what does it take? And what are some of the biggest ideas behind being a great leader?
So yes, I believe everyone can be a leader because you have a choice when you walk out in the world every day. You can either be a victim or you can be a leader. And that's really what I've spent the past 15 years on, and the leader who had no title is all about that, which is you can lead without a title. The world says you need to be a prime minister, a president, a billionaire, an MBA, a CEO, and then you're a leader. Right. And that is just such a myth that causes people to betray the leader that lies within them. And so leadership is less about a title, less about the size of your office, less about how much money you have. It's much more a way of thinking, a way of being. And like I say, it's just the opposite of being a victim. So anyone can walk out in the world regardless of what they do or where they live and start thinking, feeling, and behaving like a leader. And you can see a victim a mile away. It's like you can hear it in their words. You know, I went to the dentist 3 days ago and you know, I just, there was someone in the office and there's no judgment, but just by his words, it was like, oh, I tried to do this, but I couldn't. I can't do this. Oh, the weather's bad, whatever. And I've been at this so long, he was suggesting his beliefs because your words reveal your beliefs.
Right.
And so the victim is all about, I can't, and it's because of this, and they give away their power. Someone once said, the number one way we give away our power is thinking we don't have any. And so the leader is very different. The leader is all about, I can, the language of possibility. I mean, words are so incredibly powerful. And so that's the opportunity everyone on the planet has today, which is to stop giving away their power, stop blaming the world around you, and as Gandhi said, walk out in the world and be the change you want to see in the world. And that's just what being a leader is all about.
Okay, so for stepping up, for people to step up, there, one of the things that I've observed with just so many people over the years, if people really are a victim, if something really bad happened to them, if they were robbed, if they were raped, if they were molested, if they were, you know, embezzled from, if they were hurt, mm-hmm. you know, if they were oppressed, I mean, there's all mm-hmm. kinds of things. If someone genuinely was a victim and then as they, you know, they develop themselves to either be defined by it or, you know, take whatever their past is and use it as a raw ingredient to hopefully learn lessons mm-hmm. and build further, there's a certain level of conditioning where someone gets into the mode of being a complainer or being a victim. What do you suggest to people? Because I think people become blind to hearing it. Like they can mm-hmm. hear what you're saying and say, okay, yeah, I kind of get that. And they have all this subconscious conditioning mm-hmm. that they wake up every day and they bitch and they complain.
Yep.
What do you suggest someone in that mode does? I mean, how do you flip that switch? I mean, that's what I love about your 5 a.m. club. It's conditioning. I mean, it's rituals. It's things right. that you do and those things develop you. But if someone is watching this or listening to this going, but Robin, you don't really understand my life because they're still in that place where they can't hear it, what would you say to them?
Well, you know, there's so much in your question. And the first thing I would say is, you know, look, I was in Johannesburg a little while ago, and I went through the airport. Mm-hmm. And I went into the men's room or washroom or bathroom, however you want to call it. And so I walked in to the men's room, and the first thing I hear is, welcome to my office. And this was the janitor at the Johannesburg men's room.
That's funny.
Who janitorized, or I'll make up a word, cleaned the toilets like Mozart composed music. Mm-hmm. Now that man has no money. That man probably has very little education. That man is judged by the world as having an unimportant job.
Right.
And that man is a hero, could be a hero to millions of people. Why? Because he actually saw himself as an ambassador to South Africa. And his passion was palpable. And his visceral commitment to doing work at the highest level was like you don't see even from the CEOs.
Right.
And all I'm saying is, even the person in the with the broken heart, the person who's down on their knees, whether they see it or not, they have a choice to rise above their circumstances. And leadership and humanity is a testament to the people who have done it. I mean, you look at Mandela, you know, 27 years in imprisonment. When his son died, he wasn't allowed to attend the funeral of his own son. He said that was one of the great pains of his life. And what did he do? The victim looks at something like that, torture, and says, I am broken. And they give up and they close their heart, they close their mind, they close their creativity, and they blame the rest of their life on what happened to them. Mm-hmm. But Mandela, what he chose to do was to use it as an opportunity, because actually, the things that break your heart, if you choose, can open your heart. Mm-hmm. Fear, the world says fear is bad. Fear is only an opportunity for bravery training. Mm. And what he did was he used those 27 years of torture to open himself mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, to the point where when he was released and became the president of South Africa, he invited his jailers to sit in the front row at his inauguration. And he was asked why, and he said, because if I don't, I'd still be in prison. And that's a long way of saying, but, you know, we do make excuses because we are very good at self-deception. Because if we actually had to face the responsibility of playing with our bigness in the world, we'd have to let go of our addiction to our excuses and leave what's safe. Am I making sense?
No, totally. Yeah.
Have to leave what's safe. I mean, we are addicted to crisis sometimes. It makes no sense. We are addicted to pain. Mm-hmm. And we'd have to actually leave the pain to go out to the possibility of pleasure and joy and greatness. And believe it or not, that frightens us.
Right.
So we make these excuses and then we blame people. Oh, Joe or Robin, I don't like the way he looks. He speaks differently. But subconsciously, as you're suggesting, those are just our protective mechanisms to avoid owning the responsibility of our brilliance.
Right. Well, and you talk a lot about power and really even being aware of that you have power. And some people, I mean, even the quote you said earlier, which you have in The Leader Has No Title, you also have what you just said reminded me of the Martin Luther King quote you have in Leader Has No Title about being the best street sweeper.
Sure.
Yeah. So the thing with the whole victim mentality, because the confession I would make is I spent a ton of my life bitching and complaining about stuff that, you know, whatever. It was an excuse for doing anything about it. But in my mind, I convinced myself, well, I didn't have any power. And the problem is, when you're in a state where you're like an adult and you actually can do something, there are children that maybe they can't run away, maybe they can't fight back, maybe they can't ask for help, and they're truly in bad situations. When you become an adult and you can develop critical thinking, if you stay in the victim role, even if it's true, even if you believe I'm really a victim and you can show this, the problem is you get no power out of it. Because in that mode, you don't really do much. And so what is power? How would you define power and accessing it?
Well, I think there's two types of power. I think there's external power, which is what most people chase because the world has sold them a bill of goods.
Yeah, I'm referring more like to the personal power.
Okay,
like,
so what is that? It's your essence. I mean, it's truly boundless energy, perfect health, maximum creativity, an unbeatable mindset, you know, and then science is proving all it, like Angela Lee Duckworth's research on grit, you know, Spencer's work on stereotype lift. It just goes on and on. But what's power? It's your ability to take the genius you were born into and unleash it on the world so that you, on your deathbed, say, I lived my glory. And so that the world is better because you've been here. And then people might be saying, well, that sounds like motivation, which I don't teach motivation. Let's go to the science. The science is actually saying, you look at the work of Anders Ericsson, the preeminent researcher in the field of exceptional performance, and a lot of authors have borrowed his research, the 10,000 hour rule, et cetera.
Yeah.
But if you actually look, he has found and studied, you know, people like Mozart and Beckham and the great athletes, humanitarians, entrepreneurs, chess champions were less about genetics and natural talent. And what makes icons in whatever field of you choose is not your talent. It's things like the amount that you practice, your ability to stay with your practice for the 10,000 hours, your social circle. I mean, what made the great Brazilian footballers great was not that they have some natural thing by living in Brazil. It's every little kid from pretty much the moment he's 3 or 4 years old, right, sees the heroes, and it's the ticket out of poverty. And so all they do is touch the football every single day and night. And by the time they're 11 years old, they've touched the football millions of times, and they are therefore untouchable compared to anyone else around the world. And all I'm saying is genius is not something you're born with. Genius is something that you apply. You don't get lucky, you make lucky. Success is not something that is, you know, divinely bestowed on you. Success, whether it's prosperity or whatever it is something that you earn by grit, hard work, finding the right people, doing the learning, etc.
So yeah, like our friend Dan Sullivan says, he says what a lot of people think of as genius is simply redundancy.
Yeah,
it's just doing things. That's great. So what do you find or see are the commonalities of people who achieve greatness? I mean, you've studied so much.
Sure. Trusting in your vision when the world calls you crazy. So Elon Musk, after PayPal, he made his money. He could have cashed out and lived in the Caribbean. What did he do? He started two companies that he admitted in an interview at Stanford Business School had a less than 50% chance of success. SpaceX, with the vision of colonizing Mars over the next 100 years, as you know, and Tesla.
Yep.
So literally, you've got to, number one, believe in yourself when the world calls you ridiculous, because otherwise you're not leading, you're following. And that applies to not only Elon Musk, but the baker and the taxi driver and the startup entrepreneur and the manager. Number two, you've got to surround yourself with the right people. I mean, you do become your conversations. If you're the smartest person on your street, maybe it's time to find a new street. If you are the fastest person in your neighborhood, maybe it's time to find a new neighborhood.
Right.
If you are the most loving person in your social circle, maybe today's the day to find a new social circle. Okay, so find the right people.
That's great advice.
Number three, the bigger the dream, the more important your team. You know, you just can't do it alone. You can't have an A-level company with C-level performers.
Right.
A fourth thing, I mean, there's so many things. The fourth thing is you want to get your inner world right, because you can't inspire your team and your customers and the marketplace if your well is empty.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
I wish you would like not have to struggle for this recalling content here.
Yeah, right? No. Another thing is you want to commit to mastery. So this is a gorgeous opportunity. Forget the economy. I think the economy is going to fall apart pretty quickly. And we've seen last week what happened. And I think we're going to get into a very messy, long period where the global economy will fall apart. But that really doesn't matter, because what I'm inviting your listeners and your viewers to do is to be so good at what you do, to paraphrase Steve Martin's words, that you create your own personal economy.
Right.
Because the marketplace always pays for mastery. So the best in world, BIW, say, you know, in a world where most people resign themselves to mediocrity in their work, you go into hotels or taxi drivers or whatever it is, it's like so many people are at average. They're card-carrying members of the cult of mediocrity. So it's a gorgeous opportunity to say, I'm going to play at mastery and be so good at what I do that when people witness me working at what I do, tears come to their eyes, like tears come to your eyes if you go to the Sistine Chapel and see Michelangelo's work. A few other things. You want to get your routines right. What make the great athletes? Not their natural talents, but the right routines.
Right.
So you've got to nail your habits. And the best in world leaders, they really have great habits. So many of them, 5 a.m. club. Yeah. So many of them, they go to the learning every quarter. So many of them have masterminds. So many of them are into personal development. They'll never tell you about it.
Right.
But they're into personal development. So many of them are runners or into fitness. I mean, that is a game changer. You want to get fit like a professional athlete, watch what happens to every other period of your life. Final thing I'd say, that the great leaders, they're cause-driven. If your source of motivation and engagement is money, you're never going to sustain the ups and the downs, the pain and the failure that you need to get to world class. You have to find a cause that touches you at a heart level or an emotional level, so you start living for a cause bigger than yourself. And that's not some platitude or romantic. You look at, you know, Steve Jobs. He didn't care about money.
Mm-hmm.
Even when he had money, all he had in his mansion or his house was a futon and a beautifully designed lamp. He wanted to bring beautiful products into the world that made people's lives better.
Yeah. No, there's so much insight there. You know, it's a couple things I want to mention of what you said. I've had two meetings at SpaceX with Elon Musk that Peter Diamandis put together. And the first one, a friend of mine asked him, how did you do what you did? Because he had literally was borrowing rent from his friends. He had like spent all the money he made from eBay trying to make SpaceX work. And he said, I just have a really high tolerance for pain. He goes, it didn't even matter. I was just going to make it work, or it just wasn't going to work. And but the way he said it was so powerful. And then you talked about the Steve Martin quote, like from the Charlie Rose interview in 2007. He asked him, how do you become such a great comedian? He said, be so good they can't ignore you.
Right.
And then Cal Newport wrote this book called, Be So Good They Can't Ignore. What was the name of this book? It's one on Pat. But anyway, I think that's
the
title.
Yeah, you're right. So Good They Can't Ignore You.
It was about passion, and it was about how passion is overrated, and develop a skill that's rare and valuable. So many people, if you pursue passion, it's about what can the world bring to you. Find your passions and make your life about your passion, versus if you focus on skills, you're looking at what can you bring to the world. So his whole premise is that passion sounds great in a seminar, but it's really not how most successful people, achieve what they achieve. And I've heard both sides. I mean, I'm friends with people that are all about passion, and other people like, yeah, it's made me rethink it. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, what are your thoughts on find your passion and pursue it? Because a lot of people, they're not anywhere near finding where they fit or where they're in a flow state. And so how do you look at that?
Well, I agree with you. Both are important. So I think acumen and talent without passion is a hollow victory. Mm-hmm. You've got to have passion. Let's go to the science, emotional contagion. Social scientists are realizing that we feel like the people who populate our life most often. Husbands and wives were studies. If the wife or husband was depressed over time, the husband or wife, the other partner, became depressed. So if you're around energy vampires and people who are depressed and miserable, you will pick up their emotions, and that will be your emotional default over time. That's pretty powerful.
Right.
So passion is incredibly important, because underneath it is actually love. Yeah. And people don't talk about love, but if you don't love what you do, if you don't love your vision, if you don't love your craft, you're not going to run through walls to be B-I-W. Michelangelo, Da Vinci, Beckham, Buffett, Jobs, Mother Teresa, the baker or the barista with the sparkle in their eyes at your favorite coffee shop when everyone else is complaining, who still, even though their heart might be breaking, looks at you and smiles and thanks you and brings their A game, is showing love. Mm. Having said that, a loving person who's like a D-level player is never going to reach iconic.
Right, right.
And that's what I mentioned, the opportunity of mastery. I mean, how many people do you know? Well, you know a lot of A players, but just walk out in the world or across the world, and very few people are on a path to mastery. You don't have to be there, and that just goes to belief, because fundamentally your daily behavior reveals your deepest beliefs. And the sad thing is, most people on the planet today have been sold a series of lies that the icons are cut from a different cloth. And because of that self-identity, their daily behavior matches their self-identity, and they're not doing the work required to be masterful in their professional lives and their personal lives, because they say, what would be the point?
Right.
Which is really sad, because, could you imagine if we got this interview out to kids in the world? People would start to go, oh, genius is less about genetics, it's more about the things I do. What do I do? Let me start doing them.
That's great. Well, how do you think about goal setting, and what's the best way for someone to not only set goals maybe the right way, but achieve them in the most fulfilling way possible?
Sure. So vague goals lead to vague results. Mm-hmm. Ask most people, right? No judgment, but what's your quarterly goal or your annual goal? I don't know. So you want to bring great precision to your goals. I call it the big five. Ask yourself at the beginning of every year, what are the five things that need to happen for this to be the greatest year in the history of my life? And then look at that every single day, and then move it forward every single week. I also have something called the daily five, which is, a great life is less about doing one brave act on a beautiful Sunday afternoon. It's more about what you do every single day. Right. Your days are your life in miniature. Take care of each day and a great life will take care of itself. So if you were to achieve 5 little wins every single day at the end of 30 days, that's 150 little wins. At the end of 1 year, it's 1,850 little wins. So the daily 5 is another tool to help you do that. Yeah.
Do you have bad days? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it may sound like a silly question, but I'm genuine. I mean, do you have days where you're just like, God, this day just sucked, or I cannot, even though I know all this intellectually, I just don't feel good? Or have you so developed mastery of your rituals and your routines and how you energize yourself that you're just pretty much in an up state all the time?
I don't have bad days. Yeah. No, of course. I
that's fantastic. I'm perfect, man. What are you talking about?
I'm enlightened. You know? I'm so full of light. Yeah. I hear people who say that, but here's my take on it.
Yeah.
There have been a few people who graced the planet who probably don't have bad days, and those are the great teachers of love and wisdom and bravery. Mm-hmm. But for me, I have days where, you know, I think life is a series of seasons.
Right.
And I think there are some times where you go, I can't believe, I've had decades like that, which is amazing, you know, like 7 years in a row where just I'm in the pocket and everything is working. So I've been very blessed. And then I have these recalibration periods where life falls apart and I'm on my knees. And I'm just being very honest with you. I hope you don't mind, but I.
Oh yeah, no, I'm the same way. I mean, look, I was crying my ass off last week over some traumatic thing I had going on. So.
Right. Well, I think you know that's just being human.
Yeah.
And you know, Albert Camus said it so well. He said, "In the midst of winter, I found there was within me an invincible summer."
Wow.
You know, which is Nietzsche, chaos gives birth to dancing stars. And I think those seasons in the wilderness where you're like an animal licking your wounds.
Right?
What does your mind say? You're wasting your time, Joe, reading all these philosophical books, journaling, praying, you know, going really deep and asking yourself the big questions. But those times when we're in the wilderness, crying, licking our wounds, and our ego is going, you're not being productive, you know, you should be making money or, you know, growing your Facebook base, all those nonsense things, right?
Exactly.
Like, those are the moments where you grow. And see, society says those times in the wilderness where your life is falling apart and you're so full of fear, mm-hmm. Oh, run from those, Joe, run from those. And what if those are the times where you actually get to look at fear in the face and you actually say, I'm not going to be codependent on the world for my happiness. I'm going to get to know my fear. I'm actually going to realize fear is nothing more than an emotion. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually not going to be afraid of my fear anymore. Could you imagine if you use those times? And so
it would be quite a shift.
So all that to say, you know, of course I have hard times and I've been in the valley of darkness and I've been on the mountaintop of success, mm-hmm. and I've just trained myself to, though I feel the pain and the fear, I don't want to run from it as much anymore because that's my gold. And why would I run from gold?
Well, okay, this is an important point because that's my gold. And I actually believe, you know, very much, I have conversations with Dan Sullivan all the time that, you know, he talks about, he was on vacation in Cape Cod years ago and he was journaling.
Right.
And he said it occurred to him that life consists of two things that work and things that don't work. And he thought about his own life and he said the biggest breakthroughs that he had in his own life mostly came out of areas that didn't work.
Right.
And if you have something that doesn't work, you know, you get in a giant fight, you have an illness, I mean, you know, something horrible happens, you can either be defined what he calls bangs, the bangs of life, where you're filled with intense negative emotions. And he's like, it's in that period where you can either you live in your past and define yourself by it, or that becomes the raw material for an incredible catalyst, you know, in a few, and it is true. And the reason I ask questions like that is I don't want anyone sitting here watching this thinking, oh, this is some person that is just, you know, surpassed everyone, because that's not who you are. I mean, I know that. And part of it is just so people can see, yeah, you know, how do you deal with it? How do you think about that stuff? So they, the listeners, the watchers, can take the quotes and the philosophies and all this wisdom that you have spent so many years, you know, just developing yourself and use it to build a better life. I mean, you know, my work, I just want to, for entrepreneurs, I want to build a better entrepreneur. And in the area of addiction, I want to help reduce human suffering. So however people need to hear those, that's how I want to present it.
And just on that point, you know, I wrote a book a number of years ago called The Greatness Guide. Mm-hmm. And the first chapter, I believe, was, I don't go back and read my books, but I believe it was, I'm no guru.
Right.
And I think, you know, all these gurus, no judgment, but I think it does a disservice to the world to pretend that we're that people are perfect.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And so I think we're all works in progress. And a lot of what I've done and what I write about in my books and podcasts or whatever is those technologies, methodologies for leadership, high performance, happiness, creativity, they really work and they've worked unbelievably for me. But, you know, I don't want to put myself up on some kind of pedestal, and I think it just, it's more valuable to people to know, you know, I come from immigrant parents, very humble beginnings, no silver spoon. The monk who sold his Ferrari has sold millions of copies. I have millions of Facebook followers. You know, I tour the world, whatever. Why do I say that? Because only to say, you know, the monk who sold his Ferrari was self-published in a Kinko's copy shop.
Yeah.
Okay, my mom edited that first book. And I was a litigation lawyer. People laughed at me. I've actually framed the letter from my first editor, who basically said, you know, writing is a craft. No one will read your characters. Your writing is poor. And it ended, you know, writing looks easy, but it's really difficult. And you know, it sort of broke my heart for about an hour sitting in my car.
Right.
And I started to get filled with self-doubt. Like I'm going to take this book out to the world and then I just said, that's just his opinion. You know, I got to that place and, you know, Ed Carson, the president of HarperCollins, saw me in a bookstore. He bought the book for $7,500 and they released it. And I'm only saying that to share, which is every single person out there watching this or listening has a dream,
right.
You know, and we all have these values and we all have unbelievable talent and we all have incredible power within us, even if the world or the people around us don't think we have that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, every single one of us, I've met super famous people just like you have. And you know what I found mostly? They're frightened little boys and girls, to be very honest.
Completely.
With you. I just watch their behavior. And, you know, it's careful about the heroes because I've met so many of my heroes and they were just frightened little kids.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got to be careful not to buy into the illusions that the world and good marketing sells people.
Right, right. It's so true. And there are so many people that are well-known, that are famous, that are admired, that are so broken. And
agreed.
I mean, I saw it, you know, by being an addict, which I'm very open about. I talk about that, you know, a lot. I remember joining a high-profile group when I was in early 2000 for addiction. People that couldn't go to 12-step meetings, they couldn't be, you know, they're anonymous, famous, you know, Academy Award-winning actors and actresses, you know, billionaires, politicians, famous athletes, people that everyone would know, and you see them in a broken state, and that really, in a lot of ways, it was beneficial because it made how real pain and suffering is at all levels. And so don't ever think that someone is, you know, like a god, because they're just humans. So
yeah. Well, that gets to leadership, which is, why is the world in a broken state? Because nations, companies, economies are just run by a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have our quote unquote leaders coming from a place of true power, coming from a place of true strength, coming from owning their internal genius, coming from living their values, coming from saying, I'm going to use my life in this position I've been given to serve the world and doing what's right versus what's easy, we're going to have broken economies, broken countries, and a broken world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who is more healthy? Who is more of a leader? The Johannesburg janitor who is working with love in his heart, who is greeting every single human being who walks in there with grace and honor, who's doing his work like it's the most important job in the world. Who is more healthy and a truer leader? Him or the person leading a company or a $50 billion company who is actually leading from a place of ego and brokenness, and it's all about filling their bank account,
right.
And it's all about ego and appearing on magazines and whatever, versus, you know, creating a culture where people are uplifted, birthing beautiful products out into the world, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So when you think about the super successful people that you've come across in your life, what are some of the most important strategies, models, or ideas that they have or use that other people do not?
They invest in education versus entertainment. Mm-hmm. They are not addicted to their mobile phones and distraction. Mm-hmm. They're maniacally focused. They are very fit. As I said, surround themselves with the right people. They understand success is a numbers game, grit, right? They're mm-hmm. relentless. Yeah, they're committed.
Yeah.
Keep their promises, over-promise, under-deliver.
Those are great. What do you think defines a great life, and what are some of the action steps that someone listening to this today can do to start creating that? Although you've talked about some, anything else?
Well, you know, I think the great thing about being human is you get to define life on your own terms. Mm-hmm. One thing I've found is, you know, the world sells us this illusion that if we have all these external toys and things, we're going to find happiness. And I've never found that to be the case. Sure, there's a difference between enduring happiness and fleeting pleasure.
Right.
Okay. So driving a great car and the hotel room and the nice house, it makes you feel better.
Yeah.
Would you rather eat beautifully prepared food or fast food?
Yeah, exactly.
And would you rather be at the back of the plane or at the front of the plane where you can sleep better, et cetera, et cetera? Of course. So enjoy the journey, but let's not make those things our gods. Let's make those things allow those things to serve us. And so to answer the question, I would say define life according to your measures of success, but it really is things, I believe, like expressing your power, doing work you find meaningful regardless of what the world thinks, finding people around you who love you, enjoying nature, you know, serving people, being a good human being.
Yeah. Well, so along those lines, I mean, I love nice things. I think money allows me to buy freedoms that lack of money does not allow. And if you have enough money to solve the problem, you don't have a problem, as Dan Sullivan says. So there are things where I love the ability to build a business and do things that allow me to do that. However, the things that, like you said, to have things that serve you versus own you, because with a lot of stuff, one of the things I realized in this, you know, this long home remodel that you're aware of that I've been going through is that a lot of the possessions, you don't own them, they own you.
Right.
And so part, you know, having things set up in my life to where I actually can benefit from it, and there's so much, I think, pain that comes from the pursuit of external stuff. But I've sometimes been the happiest in my life just sitting down meditating, not even thinking about anything, just keeping things really simple. I remember, I can't even remember the leader's name in Vietnam. I went to Vietnam in 2009. I had a vacation there, fascinating. And they had the big, for lack of, this will show my lack of extensive world knowledge, but the equivalent of the White House in Vietnam, whatever the building was called, the leader, he actually, during the Vietnam War, one of the leaders, he actually didn't stay in the house that was for him. Stayed in this little guest house that had one bedroom and a table where he ate, and it allowed him to try to do the best job he could to lead his country out of war during that time, because it was so, he just didn't want the distractions of all that stuff.
You know, I just love what you're saying, because one of my friends is a venture capitalist, and this might sound obvious, but he said the thing about homes, they break. Mm-hmm. Things break. Now, that's really actually very profound, because all these people, oh, I wish I had five homes. You know the stress involved in having multiple homes?
Right.
The stress involved in having airplanes? The stress involved with even having different cars, they break. And so you're right. You add on these layers of complexity, and they make your life less free than more free. Mahatma Gandhi, one of the greatest human beings to walk the planet. You know what he died with? A stopwatch, a holy book, his loincloth, his spinning wheel. And I think...
Yeah, 10 possessions.
Oh, and sandals and a few other things.
Yeah.
Mother Teresa, I was at where she died, or the room she died in, or where she lived in Calcutta. Mm-hmm. All there was a bed and a desk, which is the difference between external power and internal power.
Yeah, totally. And there's so much to be said with just looking at that. Yeah, that's amazing. So let's see. What are three or four of the biggest limitations, obstacles, or blocks people come up against when trying to achieve great success, and how can they break through them?
You know, it starts off with our self-identity. Your income will never exceed your self-identity. And there's a lot of great research of social psychologists like Heidi Grant Halverson who are saying your story about your potential determines whether you live your potential. That's a powerful idea.
Right.
If your story is I'm a victim versus a leader without a title, then why would you read the books? Why would you do the practice? Why would you populate your life with great people? What would be the point? So the first point is your self-identity, which is your core beliefs. You got to, that's where the real work begins. And I don't think we have time today with in terms of the tools, but that's the first thing. Mm-hmm. Second thing related to that is your fears. You are not your fears. Your fears are just a bunch of emotions that naturally come up every time you leave the safe harbor of the known. Mm-hmm. There is such a seduction, which is, I feel scared, there's something wrong. No, your fears are nothing more than your greatness and growth coming to get you. If you're going to live an epic life, you're going to be scared all the time. Fantastic. You're growing. Third thing that we bump up against, we don't have energy. Energy is more valuable than intelligence. I mean, I've met a lot of very successful people, and they're not that smart.
Right.
But they have massive energy, yeah. Massive grit. Yeah. Right? That one idea, and they're just like a pit bull, and they get locked into it, and it leads them to billionaire. So take care of your energy by fitness, diet, inspiration, other things. Really quickly, I'd say, you know, again, it's your social network. Mm-hmm. Because most of us have a game-changing idea, and then we share it with our family, and they go, you know.
Exactly. You're not going to get a
lot. And they go, oh, yeah, you're right. And then we go back to being, you know, average.
Well, that's why I love, like, the way I think about Genius Network. Genius Network is like my, you know, my, one of my company names and my group and all that. But I think of it as a wisdom network. I think of it as who are the people that just have insight that I can, you know, link into. Cause I can solve almost any problem in my life through my Genius Network, mm-hmm. you know, and who are those people? But mm-hmm. that sort of thing. The other thing that you said too reminds me of, I have a friend, Dave Kekich, who's paralyzed from the chest down. He's been in a wheelchair for half his life, but just has developed such an incredible life. He runs a Maximum Life Foundation. And he says that enthusiasm covers many deficiencies. Mm-hmm. And so just going into something with a really good attitude. So let me see here. What else here? It's one thing to achieve and be successful and another to be fulfilled. What do you think makes a fulfilling life?
Well, I think, you know, at the end of your life when you're on your deathbed, it's only going to come down to two ideas. And it's not going to be whether you had the right handbag, title, whether your social network thought you were cool and sexy, your neighborhood, your bank account. It's going to come down to number one, as compared to the potential talent and genius you were born into, how much of it did you leverage through your days to unleash onto the world? Mm-hmm. And number two, how many people did you lift up with you? When I was growing up, my dad took out this quote from Rabindranath Tagore. And he said it all the time to me, and it was, son, when you were born, you cried while the world rejoiced. Live your life in such a way that when you die, the world cries while you rejoice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that might sound very idealistic, but actually it's an amazing driving force as an entrepreneur or a business builder or a game changer, which is ultimately our calling is to use our lives to birth genius level value into the world and lift the world with us by the time we get to the end of our lives. And I think that's really all that matters, because otherwise, like, you know, think about all the people who thought they were great emperors. You don't even think about them now.
Well, you know, so you probably hear continuously how much your ideas and your writings and your speaking has been beneficial and encourages other people. How do you take that in? How do you interpret it? When people come up and ask you for an autograph, I mean, mm-hmm. to me, it's the weirdest thing in the world. And, you know, and I'm not a famous guy. It's just when I'll do seminars, people come up and I do my best. Like, I'm not a guru. I mean, you have no idea. I've plenty of personal problems and nothing special, because I want people to actually feel that, hey, you can do so much more than you actually believe you can do. And you're a guy that's a huge encourager. How do you take all of this stuff in? Because you millions of people read your works.
The moment you think you're a master is the moment you become a beginner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I run an event called the Titan Summit, which we run every year. And there's a model I teach, which is called the Titan's Decline. Like, I'm not really fascinated by people who get to the top, whether it's the billionaires I work with, or who show up at those events, or the pop icons, or the great athletes. That's great. What I'm fascinated about is what makes a legend versus a fad. And we haven't talked so much about my business philosophy, but to me, you know, what makes an iconic brand or company that endures the generations versus a company that's really cool for 3 years?
Well, what's great, and we're talking about it right now.
So well, okay, so it's the Titan's Decline. And really, I mean, the starting point is the moment you think you know everything and the moment you fall in love with your success is the beginning of obsolescence. Mm. So when people come up to me and they send me this or whatever on the social media, they're saying things. I say thank you because that shows respect and I'm humbled and privileged to get to do what I get to do. But, you know, when I go home, I'm just dad to my kids. You know, like right. they I'm not some kind of something special aside from their father. You know, I spend a lot of time with my parents. They're in their 70s. My friends are very wonderful people, but they're not really in the circle that we talk about in the sense of, you know, being at the events we talk about. I spend a lot of time alone, a lot of time praying. You know, I don't share that very often, but, you know, prayer, affirmation, reading the great books of wisdom and philosophy, journaling, walking in nature, trying to keep my feet on the ground. Mm-hmm. Because I think the moment, you know, ego and arrogance sets in, you know, again, I mentioned it, but it's so profound, I think, important, I think, because if your attention and your focus is on how many people are going to like me on Facebook, how many bestsellers will I have, how much money am I making, this launch, how much whatever, your attention and your point of being is actually off being of service, creativity, lifting the world, transforming people, which paradoxically makes you iconic in the world. And if I could, because we've talked a lot about a lot of big ideas, but people are probably wondering, like, so what are the tactics? Well, one thing is to remember that self-mastery and leadership, and these are skills. Like, if someone were to say, well, I want to be heavyweight boxing champion of the world, and I read a book on it, and afterwards I didn't change, we'd call them crazy. Mm-hmm. But how many people do we talk to in leadership and high performance? They go, I read the book and nothing worked. Well, the book worked, the ideas worked, you just didn't have the guts and commitment and discipline and follow through and self-sacrifice to do the work. Mm-hmm. So bravery is a skill. It doesn't show up one day. It shows up after 10,000 hours of, we don't think about that.
Right.
Bravery, confidence, you know, all of those internal things. Being loving is a skill. You don't just get it, you earn it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah, I wear my scars on my sleeve because everything I've earned, whether it's the character I have, and I'm not saying it's so special, but the character I have, the thinking I have, the energy I have, the bravery I have, the love that I have. Like, I mean, love is a very powerful word. That has been very, very, very hard earned.
So what are 4 or 5 of the best business or entrepreneurial lessons you've learned over your life that you feel have served you the most? I mean, when you were early on, you know, trying to figure out what to do, what were those things that you...
So whatever your position is, commit yourself to bringing your A game to it every single day. One of my publishers is HarperCollins. The former head of HarperCollins, Jane Friedman, started off as a secretary. But I bet you when she was a secretary, she was world class. How many people do you know? It's like, when I become CEO, then I'll bring my A game. So whatever you do, lead without a title. Outwork everyone around you. Know more about what you do than anyone else. Mm-hmm. Put it, you know, effort, like good old hard work is unbelievably important. Second business building idea, you want to get your plumbing right. You know,
I can take this in a lot of different
ways. So you want to, yeah, this is not a GI, a gastrointestinal tract piece of advice. It's really get your architecture right, you know? Like the time to build your business is not when you're on fire. It's get the right people, get the right financial systems, get the right culture, get the right, so get the architecture right. Third, entrepreneurship, be all about creating value. There is a database of the world's happiest people called the German Socio-Political Panel Database. World's largest database of happiness. Happiest people?
Really?
Yeah, it's not where they live, it's not what they eat, it's not what they do. They all see themselves as contributors of value. Wow. So make it your obsession and your mission to be contributing value. And that just means if you're flipping pizza, you know, you're doing pizzas, like, just say, I'm going to create great value for the people out there expecting my pizza. What else? Innovation, right? Like, you know, there, it's so easy to become complacent, and yet you want to say, on a consistent basis, how can I bring products out in the world or do work that scares me and that people would probably laugh at? And that's probably what you have to do.
That is a great insight right there. I mean, because like earlier about talking about earning things, you know, confidence does not just happen. Like, oh, I'm going to think I'm confident and be confident. Because if you act like you're confident but you're scared, you're really kind of arrogant. You're sort of disguising it. But it starts with courage. You know, courage never feels good, but confidence feels good. But courage is usually what you have to go through when you're scared, when you're in that position. And then if you do it and you master it, then you get to a point where you feel confident, and then it's a good feeling. But there's the thing with a lot of people, they just don't want to have to feel any pain. They don't want to have to feel any fear, any uncomfortableness, and they don't do shit in their lives in that state.
Yeah, pain is the result of potential unexpressed. And why are so many people addicted to their phones? Why are so many people addicted to TV? Why are so many people addicted to chit-chat versus executing around their goals? And all the things we've talked about. They will sell you a story which is, no, I love that TV show. I love my addiction to distraction. But it's unconscious. Mm-hmm. And I think this is like one of the most important things I wish people would understand, which is most of us actually have a broken heart. We are in such pain, as you're suggesting, of potential betrayed. Why? Because as little kids, we had such connection to love, such connection to talent, such connection to the meaning of life, such connection to our potential. And we could have done amazing things. And then our mothers, fathers, teachers, preachers, et cetera, well-intentioned as the world is, started Matrix, pulling the wool over the veil over our eyes. And we actually became hypnotized into believing that icons are cut from a different cloth. And what that did was it created this well of deep subconscious pain because we saw that self-betrayal. And what do we do now? We keep really busy, busy being busy, always busy, busy, but it's an escape mechanism of a frightened person. And the real work of a leader and an entrepreneur, it's not building the external business. That's all important. Like, we could talk hours on the right team, culture. Like, I teach all that stuff. Right. The real work of leadership and to be an icon, it's all within. To get to a place where you own your power, you own your talent, you figure out your values. You don't care if people laugh at you, because if they don't laugh at you, you're playing too small. And then you go out in the world and you show up the way you can.
Yeah, that's good. You know, one thing that's so great about your materials and your training, and there's so much of yours I haven't gone through, but there's a lot that I have, is the whole notion of self-leadership. Because it's really, if you don't get you together, you can read every damn management book on the planet, you can do all this stuff, but mm-hmm. if you don't have you together, all that other shit's not going to be together. Mm-hmm.
And so, what's
the story that you tell about the map? Tell that story.
Well, it's you know, an old Earl Nightingale story from a great old program called Lead the Field.
It's my favorite all-time program. I love Lead the Field.
Off the charts.
Yeah.
So, you know, one night there was a father and a little boy, and the little boy wanted to play with his father and have some fun, and the father was too busy being an adult. And the father was reading the newspaper, and the little kid, come on, Dad, let's have some fun. And the father was too busy reading the newspaper. And to get his son off his back, he got an idea. He noticed there's a picture of the globe in the newspaper. So he tore it out and he ripped it up into many tiny pieces, and he handed it to his little son and he said, here, son, go put this back together. Thinking it would take his son quite a while to do it. But children come to us more highly evolved than adults to teach us the lessons we need to learn. And after only a few minutes, the little boy comes back and the globe is perfectly back together. And the father couldn't believe it. He said, son, how did you do that? And the little boy looks up at his dad and he said, Dad, on the other side of the globe, there was a picture of a person. And Dad, once I got the person together, the world was okay. And there's so much science confirming wisdom. But once you get your thinking and your intellectual life together, so that's understanding, then you go out in the world and your behavior reflects the wisdom. The second summit or second inner dimension is your emotional life. Like, there might be entrepreneurs listening, well, what does this have to do with building a great business? If you have anger in your heart, if you feel small and powerless deep inside, you're not going to uplift your team and inspire them to unleash their brilliance on the world because you're a scared little kid.
Yeah.
So that's the emotion. Forgiveness, anger to love, remove the emotional toxicity. Third inner part. Oh, Robin, why, Joe, what's this inner part all about? Your physical dimension. If you don't have any energy, you can't have the stamina to put in the time, or stress knocks you down. So the inner part, you know, I call it the two massage protocol, twice a week, a 90-minute massage. We haven't, right? You know, eat the right food. I'm playing with intermittent fasting. I'm throwing a lot, but, you know, offering, but intermittent fasting, right? You want to get more done, eat less food. Make sure you're running the morning workout, et cetera, et cetera. And then finally, and on that inner piece, just because I want to be of service, the best move you can make is hire a coach and get the coach to show up at your house 5 a.m., pay them the money, 5 a.m., three times a week. It's a game changer. And then the final inner piece is your spiritual life, which is, there's tons of research, I shared some with you, which is the number one source of happiness is find your cause. But if you are so stuck in your ego and your human beingness that you're not living for a cause that's larger than yourself, then you're not going to be on fire and change the world.
Right, right.
What is one question I should have asked you that if you answered would deeply impact everyone listening to this? And what would the answer be to that? So what should I have asked you that I didn't?
Well, you know, it's that question I get asked a lot, which is how you want to be remembered. And you like Charlie Rose, you know, like he does great interviews. And so ask me how I want to be remembered.
Would that be like, what's your legacy?
Although what's
you're
your
like,
legacy?
I hate legacy questions.
What's your legacy?
What do you hope that doing all of this is going to do for your life, your children, and humanity?
But I like the legacy because I don't care. Like, you know, if it was 10 years ago, it would be, oh, I hope that people think I was a great author and leadership presenter and whatever. Right now, I don't care. Yeah. Because legacy is an ego trap. Mm-hmm. And
I totally agree.
You know what I mean?
I think the world's going to be fine when I'm gone. It's like, okay, like, before I showed up, it'll be doing its thing after I'm gone. So, but while I'm here, you know, there are some things I can do.
Look at the people we thought were so important. There's some have passed away this year. Mm-hmm. And we heard about them and we read about them for about a week. Mm-hmm. And then we forget about them. Okay. Now, there's a few Shakespeare's, and there's a few Gandhi's, and there's a few Mandela's, and there's a few Steve Jobs's, and there's a few Edison's and Ford's. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I'm going to be a bunch of dust, and probably no one's going to remember me except for my kids and my loved ones. Mm-hmm. And personally, who cares? We're just a bunch of dust. We're right now, the things that hurt us or make us happy, we're just on a little planet. In probably thousands, scientists confirming in right. thousands of galaxies, right. you know. And so all I want to do now is, while I can leave people better than I found them, remember that every moment in front of another human being is a moment of truth. You get to actually live your values. I want to do great creative work. I want to use not only my successful times, but my hard times to grow. And I want to contribute value.
Yeah. What are the trade-offs? What are the trade-offs for you, and what are the trade-offs for people that are watching this? Like, there's this whole notion of you can have everything. I mean, I kind of get the encouraging side of that, but at the end of the day, you know, there are trade-offs. You know, you're not going to eat fast food. You're not going to like sit and watch TV all day. I mean, there's trade-offs. So what are they?
One of the trade-offs that I'm learning more and more as my profile rises is, you know, I feel very grateful given how large the social base is. If you look at my Facebook following mm-hmm. or Twitter, there's very little negative.
Right.
But what I'm realizing is one of the trade-offs is you will bring out the haters. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to learn, which is that just means you're disrupting the status quo, which is you're doing good. So that's one trade-off. You can pursue your vision or you can be liked, but you can't do both. I think another trade-off is, I don't see it as a trade-off, but you know, you're not going to be sleeping all the time and eating the wrong food and watching Breaking Bad every night, and you know, I adore what I do, and I adore the discipline. Mm-hmm. But you know, you can be a leader or you can make excuses. You can't do both.
Right, exactly. Well, there's a saying, and this applies to more than food, but it's a food thing, where nothing tastes as great as being lean feels.
Right.
And nothing, you know, you can apply that, exchange different words for, you know, feeling in shape feels, you know, working out. I mean, yesterday I got up at, you know, 5 a.m. and went and hiked Camelback Mountain at 5:30 a.m. and it's just a better day.
True.
When I do those, and when I don't do it, it's not as good of a day. So, all right, so your books are awesome. There's so much more. Where can people go to get your books, learn more about your organization, get more training from you? Because you have put an incredible body of work out into the world, and I am I'm one of your highest endorsers.
Thank you, Joe.
Your stuff is awesome, and everyone that is watching this or listening to this, if I can't imagine this would not resonate with you unless you're like not paying any attention whatsoever. Robin's work will greatly impact your life, your family's life. There's probably someone that you know that would be well served to be introduced to this work. Please share this interview with everyone. Where do they get more of you?
Well, the starting point would be the if they're interested in my books, The Leader Who Had No Title or The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, and everyone knows where you can get those.
Go to this bookstore.
And then
go to Amazon.
You know, I really work very hard on Facebook and Twitter, so just Google me on Facebook, and I put out videos and hopefully very content-rich posts constantly. At robinsharma.com is my blog, which, you know, I believe so much in epic content. I spend days crafting a blog post, so read the, that's all free. YouTube, I think we have probably 150 or 200 carefully crafted YouTube videos on leadership, high performance, positive mindset, becoming an icon. Mm-hmm. And I think the final thing I'd mention would be, it's not for everyone, but every year we do the Titan Summit. I'm just so proud of it. My team and I, last year we had Richard Branson in the room with us. Mm-hmm. This year we will have, it's not announced yet, but we'll have one of the legends of the NBA in the room with us. Mm-hmm. And it's really 4 days every December. TitanSummit.com, you can get information. And it's themed. The first day is high performance and epic productivity. The second day is living to 100. Third day is how do you grow a world-class company. And the final day is how do you become a world builder. And I actually build a faculty. We usually have 5 to 10 faculty members. These are global experts. Mm-hmm. And anyone who's interested can find that.
That's awesome. And I guess for all the men out there, they could probably shave their heads like us. And if they're trying to figure out where they can fit in time to listen to maybe like one of your books on audio or something while they're shaving their head, that would be a good idea. I think that gives immense personal power to someone to just not have
hair. It's true, and it feels good too.
Yes, it does. Any famous last words?
You know, I just want to thank you for the generosity you've given to me over this however long, your incredible preparation. I've done a lot of interviews, your focus, and, you know, to the backstory, I was going, maybe we should make this a 30-minute interview, right? And what you brought out came from my mind and my heart because of your preparation and plus how fun it's been being here with you. So I just want to sincerely thank you. It's been awesome.
Thank you. And you're awesome, man.
Oh, thank
Love
you.
It.
Thank
Love
you.
It. So thank I you, appreciate Joe. It. So please give, wherever this video or audio is posted, please share your comments. And again, really appreciate you taking the time to listen to this, but put it into action and share it with the world and encourage others today and let us know what you get out of it. So thank you.